enjoyed when you've finished something, being able to sit back and say, yeah, that was cool. You know, like you've had to clean your room up and you finally did it and it's like, yeah, job done. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, how do you do it? Yeah, it's called a pair of hands and a vacuum cleaner. Don't you? Right, okay. So, all right, I want to talk about your fight for a minute. So who are the fighters here again? Who are the good fighters? People that want to fight. So Paul says, I have fought the good fight. It's interesting, isn't it, that he uses the analogy of a fight. And this is a guy who's a pastor, he's a minister, and we're probably not known for encouraging people to go out and have brawls. We're meant to be about love and peace and all those sorts of things. And yet Paul, the father of the church, is sort of saying to this young pastor, I have fought the good fight. But the thing is, the fight and the battle is a theme that runs throughout the Bible right from the very start. And it's something that goes right back before creation, because we find out that there was actually a battle that went on in heaven. Before the world was ever created, the angels were all there in heaven, and God had created this amazing angel. And his name was Lucifer. Anyone heard the name Lucifer? You've probably heard of little Lucifers. They're like firelighters. And Lucifer was the most beautiful angel that was created. And what happened? He was so amazing. Have you ever met somebody who just looks so amazing? They're so beautiful, but they are totally enamored. They totally can't see anything but themselves. Anyone met someone like that? Yeah, don't name names. But basically, Lucifer was totally, I'm trying to think of nice ways to put it, but he was totally overcome with his own beauty and himself. And he got to the point where he said, you know what, I will exalt myself. I will be bigger than God. And there was this, and what happened is he convinced a lot of people to go with him, and there was a battle in heaven, and a third of the angels ended up going out. So that's the scene, if you like, of the battle that goes on. So we are actually in a battle, and there's no denying it. Sometimes someone's life can be hard. Sometimes there are stuff that goes on that, hey guys, just I want you all just to give me just a little bit of respect just for a few minutes, and I won't be long. But I'd really, really value that if you can do that. So you just listen to me. I'm happy to talk and clown around, but right now, just listen to me for a couple of minutes and we'll keep going. And so, we're in a battle. Life gets hard sometimes, doesn't it? Like, there's stuff that goes on, and to deny that there's a battle or a fight that goes on is denying really what life's all about. But what is the fight? What is the fight? Because have you ever felt like you're fighting, but you don't quite know what you're fighting? It's like, oh, you know, sometimes you can get so frustrated and angry, and you just want to do stuff, but you don't know who you got to fight. You don't know. No, yes, Sasha, you felt like that sometimes. Yeah, well, that can happen too. That can happen. So what is the fight? Let me read to you again from 1 Timothy. And Paul says, Timothy, my son, here are my instructions for you based on the prophetic words that were spoken about earlier. May they help you fight well in the Lord's battles. May they help you fight well in the Lord's battles. And I think it's important to remember that the battle that we're fighting, if we're a Christian, if we're following Jesus, that the battle we're fighting is actually not our own battle. It's actually the battle he's called us to fight. And it makes a big difference knowing whose the battle is. And the battle is actually Jesus. It's his battle. He's called us to fight that battle. So he owns it. And if he owns it, he's going to help us get through it. And the other thing is, who are we fighting? Who are we actually fighting? And Ephesians 6 verse 12 says, "For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers, authorities in the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, against evil spirits in heavenly places." So here's something that we've got to remember. Our fight isn't against people. The fight's not against people. And sometimes you can get really irritated with... Who's been irritated with a person? Everybody here has, haven't they? Yeah, we get like that. But it's important to remember that our fight actually isn't against people. That our fight is what the Bible calls it, against powers and principalities. It's against the spirit of something. And it's more than just fighting spooky spirits. It's about fighting against forces that would want this world to go in a different direction and a different place. For example, have you ever noticed that an institution or something has a certain feel or spirit about it? You can replace all the people, but you can get exactly the same result because there's a power in an institution. We change governments all the time, but we often get the same thing because there is a spirit about the way that they do things. And so the fight that we're called to fight against, yes, it is things that go on in the spirit realm, but it's also the way that that works in institutions and things like that. So because it's a spiritual war, unspiritual weapons don't work. And if we're trying to fight something in the natural, we use natural weapons. But if we're going to take something on in the spiritual, we've got to use spiritual weapons. So I think to understand that too, sometimes we get really frustrated with why stuff doesn't work, but we're trying to wage the battle in the wrong place. We're trying to sort of deal with stuff at where it's coming out rather than at the source of things, which is in the spiritual. So it's helpful to understand that that is where our fight is. And 2 Corinthians 10 verse 4 says, "We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down strongholds and human reasoning to destroy false arguments." Have you ever tried to reason your faith with an avid unbeliever, with somebody that's really passionate that they don't believe in God? And you can have all these well thought out, very, very reasonable arguments, and they can make sense to you. But if somebody's in that other place, it actually doesn't matter how good your logic is, you're unable to convince them. And the reason is that where the battle's going on, it's not a logical battle. Logic, yeah, comes into it at some level, but it's a spiritual battle. It's a heart battle. It's a faith battle. It goes on in another realm. Because you can talk to your black and blue in the face, but it won't bring about change, because the change actually needs to happen in the spirit rather than in the natural. So sometimes it's helpful for us to know that. The last thing about the fight is, can we win the fight? Can we win the battle? Yes, we can. Yeah, good call. 1 John 5 verse 5 says, "And we can win this battle against the world." So it says, who can win this battle against the world? Only those who believe that Jesus is the Son of God. So when you've got Jesus on your side, you can win the battle. And another verse from 1 John. It's actually 2 John, I think, when I get back here. So 1 John 2:13, he says, "I'm writing to you who are mature in the faith, because you know Christ who existed from the beginning. I'm writing to you who are young in the faith, because you have won the battle with the evil one." He's actually saying, you know what? The battle can be won. So we can actually walk in victory because we've already won the battle. So you don't actually have to always feel like you're in some sort of fight that you're not winning. You can actually enjoy walking in victory because you've already overcome. The Bible says, resist the devil, you know, submit yourself to God, resist the devil and he'll flee from you, so you can walk in the victory of that. So look at the power of God rather than the impossibility of your situation. It's interesting. Sometimes we can look at stuff in our world and think, how can that change? What could we do there? How can I ever get through that? But if we actually look at the power of our God instead of the impossibility of the situation, we realize that things can change and we're in a battle that can be won. So the next thing is your race. I want to talk about your race. And he says, "I've finished the race." So where are we running to? Here tonight, you saw people running around a track. And apart from getting fit and having a bit of fun, it doesn't actually take you anywhere, does it? Because you just go round and round and round and, you know, yeah, that's it. You want to do a couple of laps for me, Kia? And you could go, Kia can go round and round and round. So come on, Kia, go, 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 go. All right, Kia, now when you get to here, I want you to stop right here. Good girl. Now, where did you end up, Kia? Back where you started. You didn't actually go anywhere, did you? And we could have left her doing that all night, and I suspect Kia could have gone for quite a while. But she wouldn't have actually got anywhere, would she? She would have kept going around this same track, around the same circle. And someone's life can feel a bit like that. Someone's life can feel like you're on a treadmill where you're running, you're putting in the effort, but you're not actually getting anywhere. And I want to just have a look at it a minute. Where are we running to? When we're called to run, and I think sometimes even as Christians, we can find ourselves putting in a lot of effort. We can find ourselves running and we feel like we're running in circles or running on a treadmill rather than actually going anywhere. And it says this in Philippians 3, 12 and 14, it says, not that I've already attained or am already perfect, but I press on that I may lay hold of that which for Christ Jesus laid hold of me. And then he goes on, he says, brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, that means to taken hold of, but one thing I do, I forget those things which are behind and I reach forward to those things which are ahead and I press on towards the upward calling of God in Christ Jesus. So the first thing about that is if we're going to run to somewhere, we've got to run from what's behind. And he says, you know what, I forget about what's behind and I run towards my calling. I want to talk about the calling in just a sec. But he says, I run from what's behind. 2 Corinthians says, so dear friends, flee from the worship of idols. Flee from the worship of idols. Now, in our day and age, most people don't think they've got some little idol, you know, some little trinket sort of thing. You see, back when the Bible was written, they used to worship things called idols, and a lot of them were perhaps things that might have been this size or a bit bigger, and they were carved out of a piece of wood or a piece of rock. Now, in our society, most people don't worship things like that. There are people that do in certain faiths, but in the most part, we don't struggle with that. But an idol is anything that you put in the place of God. And what Paul's saying as he writes to the Corinthians is he says, don't only just disregard it, but run away from those things that are in the place of God. So whatever it is, you know, sometimes that can be, you know, it can be a person, it can be an addiction, or it can be a hurt, something that you're not prepared to let go, that you're putting in a higher place than God. And he says, don't only just try and put them aside. He says, run from them, flee from them. And then again here in 1 Timothy 6:11 from the Amplified Bible, it says, but as for you, O God, O man of God, flee from these things, aim at and pursue righteousness, true goodness, moral conformity to the character of God, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. So we've got to run towards our calling. So where are we running to? We're not going around in circles. We're actually running towards our calling. And it's important to understand that we're running towards this upward calling of Christ Jesus. So when you are running towards what he calls you to, you're actually always being lifted up. You see, Jesus is never about putting people down. He's never about oppressing people. He's always about lifting you up. So you're running towards an upward calling. So you're running towards something that is actually lifting you to a purpose that's greater than yourself. Your eyes are being lifted. You're being called into something else. You're being called into the upward calling. So you're not running on the spot. You're running towards your upward calling. And sometimes we think, well, what is my calling? What is my calling? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Well, it's actually not rocket science. It's only a case of deciding that you want to look at Jesus and run towards him, and he will lift you up into your calling. That's how you go about it. Your calling will always lift you up. A Bible commentator said this. He said, it's the high calling because it comes from above. The conception of it has emanated from his heart. It's a high calling because it's worthy of God. It's a high calling because it is so much above the ideals of men. And it's a high calling because it summons us to where Christ sits at the right hand of God. You know, when you're in your calling, you will actually be attracted and you'll be lifted up and you'll start to think much more like Jesus. And you will actually be able to understand what he's doing, and we live less frustrated because we're running towards our upward calling. Your calling draws you to Christ. It enables you to hear his voice. It enables you to hear his heart, and it enables you to live with purpose. So last one I've got here is your faithfulness. Paul says, I have remained faithful. So how do we remain faithful? And often we think about faithfulness as being perhaps what we say no to. So if you think about it, you know, in a relationship scenario where when a relationship goes wrong, often it's because somebody has been deemed to be unfaithful. And we think about that as being what you say no to. Otherwise, you know what, I've committed to this person. That means I'm saying no to other people. But I think we often forget that being able to say no to something is determined by what we've already said yes to. See, I've been lucky enough to be faithful to my wife for, I don't know, I've forgotten how long we've been married now, about 27 years, I think. And essentially it's because I said yes to her that gives me the background. It gives, not the background, but it gives me the foundation is probably the right word, to be able to say no to other things. And it's not always that, it's actually even saying no to things that in the first instance mightn't seem that bad, but they are actually going to draw us apart, they're going to take us away. So because I've said yes to her, I say no to a whole lot of other things. And if we say yes to God, if we say yes to Jesus, we can very easily find ourselves saying no to other things without feeling like we're missing out or feeling like we're being ripped off. It's because we say yes to him that we happily say no to other things. And if we want to remain faithful, we've got to know what we're saying yes to so that we know what we say no to. See, saying no for the sake of it feels like, oh, that's like a whole lot of stuff that we're missing out on. But it is actually your calling and your purpose that really makes that easy, because when you say yes to something, you're committed to it. So there are other things that become no non-options anymore as you go through that. Faithfulness, I don't think, is just a singular thing. Sometimes we think faithfulness is this very personal thing when we talk about, you know, my faith and have you got a faith. But remaining faithful to your calling, I don't think is something you do by yourself. And in Ephesians, very well-known verses here, it says this in Ephesians 6:16. It says, in addition to all these things, hold up the shield of faith so you can stop the fiery darts of the enemy. And it was talking about the soldiers of Roman times. And they would have their military gear was really different to what they have now. They didn't wear camouflage clothing and so forth. But one of the things that they actually had when they were going into battle were these big shields. And they weren't like those little round shields that you see sometimes in the, you know, in the fighty sword movies. They were quite a large shield that would cover most of the body. And it says the fiery darts of the enemy. And what would happen in those days is when an army was pushing forward towards a city or something like that, the enemy would send out darts. Sometimes they'd have poison on them. Sometimes they'd be on fire. Sometimes they would have all sorts of things on these arrows that they would shoot towards them. And the thing about an army like that, if they're shooting arrows over top of you, those arrows, their trajectory is going to go up and it's going to come down and it's going to start landing on people and it's going to start taking people out. So you were in a pretty vulnerable situation. The way that these guys would use their shields was they would lock their shields together. What they would do is these shields were actually designed almost like roof tiles so that they could actually fit in together, and the guys on the front would have rows of these shields and they would put them together, and so instead of them being one shield, they would actually form, you know, a great big line of shields, and it And it went from being singular shields to being like a wall. And if they got that right, that wall was almost impenetrable. The arrows wouldn't get through that because they were almost, you couldn't get through them. And I reckon sometimes we think of our faith as being a singular thing. The reason that God calls us into a family is that if we want to remain faithful, if we want to fight the good fight, if we want to run the race with endurance, if we want to remain faithful, I don't think any of us can do it by ourselves. I think sometimes our faith can feel like it's not very big. But in this room, if we were to combine together the faith that we all have, and it's like it locks together, we could actually face nearly anything. There'd be nothing that could get through when we allow that to come together and start to lock in so that we can go forward in that. So no matter where you are, what you're feeling at the moment, you might think my faith isn't that strong. Well, that's okay, because your faith can form an amazing brick in the wall. It can form an amazing part of what is happening. So let's pick up our shield. No matter how big that shield is or how we feel it is, let's pick that up. And it's not a singular thing. It's something that we carry together, and it protects us. And we have to put some of these things in place. You know what? We can run a race that takes us towards an upward calling. We can actually fight a fight that's not just like being a rebel without a cause. It's actually we're standing for something. We're standing with people. And we are fighting a fight that has actually already been won. So we can do that with great confidence. We can run with endurance, like I said, and we can have a shield of faith which actually protects us as we go forward and takes us to places that we could never go by ourselves. So that's my thoughts for tonight. So we've got to be able to fight the good fight. We've got to be able to run a race that takes us somewhere towards our upward calling, and we need to be able to remain faithful. You know what my prayer is for some of you guys here that are younger tonight is that some of you have actually, you've made a decision to follow Jesus, haven't you, some of you guys? And my prayer and what I'd love to see for you tonight is that when you're my age, when you're an old bloke, when you're 50, I'm only 49 for another 2 weeks. But for you guys to be able to say, you know what? Jesus did something in my life that was so real that I've been able to run a race that has taken me somewhere. It's taken me to places in the world that I couldn't imagine. It's given me opportunities that I wouldn't have thought were possible. It's been able to give me a purpose and something to live for. I've been able to run that sort of race. I've actually been able to stand up for some things that have made a difference. And I've been able to remain faithful. I've been able to be still following Jesus and still holding it together. And I think if we can put some of those things in place, you'd be amazed at what happens. So, Dan, if you want to...